Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to season two of the 147 podcast with me, Sports MC Phil Seymour, and him, the reigning players and tour champion and former champion of the world, the magician, Sean Murphy. And in a bizarre twist of fate, Mr. Murphy, you are in the greatest city on earth, and I'm in Preston. What's going on?
Good evening, sir. How are you? Yes, I'm still here and you're not here. Of course, I wasn't here fulfilling my BBC duties, I would no longer be here, having lost my match to Hussein Vafai last night. So I'm thankful to still be here. When you play as badly as I did, you don't deserve to stay in the city, but I am still here nonetheless.
Well, you know what it is, Sean?
We push on.
That's what happens when you commentate and pundit during a tournament.
That's what they say.
You're going to get it, aren't you? Hussein played very well.
Hussein played lovely. He was the better player by some distance. He played nicely. I was below par. And, you know, the standard is such on tour these days. If you have a bad day, you get beaten. Simple as that.
He plays his shots, doesn't he?
Yeah. Do you know, I like watching
him
play.
He's great to watch. He's a joy.
I like the way he plays the game. And I was thinking this in the chair. He plays the game to win. A lot of players play to not lose. They play a very protectionist style, whereas he actually goes for the kill. You know, he's trying to beat you. I like him, and I like his game. So good luck to him.
Yeah, absolutely. And commiserations to you, Sean. But like you said, you are staying in the greatest city on earth for the week, working for the BBC, doing your punditry and commentary and everything else that you do. And I'm not there, which is mad, isn't it? You're in York and I'm not. What is going on? So I'll be back later in the week. But there you go. Sadly, no time to even get to the snooker in my own city. But we are together next week, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on. First of all, thank you for all the comments on the last podcast. We started a bit of a furore, or you started a bit of a furore in the media. I think it got covered pretty much everywhere with your comments on Stephen Hendry. Yeah, that was interesting, wasn't it? That seemed to go a bit wild, didn't it?
It's a funny one, you know, because I know you can't be across everything. You can't be across all outlets and everyone and anyone in snooker who makes a comment on stuff. But I have noticed a bit of a trend that when we say something, particularly on here or, you know, if I make the odd comment on stuff, it does seem to sort of blow up and go a bit further. I don't know why that is. I don't think my opinions carry that much weight, to be honest. But I feel like, you know, if we make a comment on here, it seems to sort of go double. Yeah, listen, you know, I didn't think what I said was unreasonable. I think it's been taken in the way it was meant. And Stephen and I certainly haven't fallen out about it. We've had a great crack about it. he's fully admitted that he's just a lazy journalist.
There you go then. So what more can you ask? Now, there was one comment you'd mentioned. We were talking about Ronnie pulling out of the Champ of Champs. And I think you mentioned his mental health, which he tweeted about. And a couple of people took that as sarcastic. We had a few comments on social media, and I actually put a message out there to say, look, listen again, because there was no sarcasm. It was all, you know, genuine, heartfelt stuff going on. And you know, you were sort of speaking from the heart, really, and saying you hope Ronnie goes away, takes the time he needs, and gets himself right, because, you know, we want a strong Ronnie O'Sullivan. There was no sarcasm there. Anyone taking that wrongly, please don't, because it wasn't. You know, we take that kind of thing very, very seriously. I know, you know, you've spoken about mental health on podcasts with John Robbins and Ellis James before, and that kind of thing. So, you know, please, people out there, just, you know, don't mishear some of the things that we talk about on here, because we, you know, we really aren't like that. So there you go. Right, that was the last podcast. Yeah. Oh, go on.
No, I was just going to say, I think people sometimes they see a story, don't they? And rather than read the story or indeed listen to the podcast, they actually judge the story by reading the comments attached to a tweet or whatever it might be. I'm pretty sure everybody who actually listened to the show took that in the way it was meant. I hope that's how it was taken. I will say this, though, whilst we're talking about it. During the qualifiers for the UKs, I was watching a match with Ding Junhui against Daniel Wales. And Ding had what can only be described as a monster fluke. And I tweeted that it was possibly the biggest fluke of all time. And to close the competition, you know, as in, like, you know, call off the search. That's what I meant. And some of the replies I got, my goodness. I think Google Translate let a lot of people down that evening. There was a lot of people who must have fed that tweet into their translator app and got completely the wrong end of the stick. Perhaps the wrong stick altogether. It was amazing how badly that went. It was incredible.
Oh dear. Well, that just talking of Judgment Day, how good's Judgment Day, by the way, now? I know it started with the Worlds, didn't it? But they've now sort of brought it in with the UK as well. It's fantastic. And you've got Dave Hendon, Rob Walker, and I think, was it Stephen Holworth on there as well?
Brilliant. I thought it was great.
Superb.
I thought
they
all did a wonderful job. They all did a fantastic job. And I think that, do you know what? I think, in my opinion, that's how they should cover all the qualifiers.
Yeah.
All of them. That kind of roaming around the room, right, let's go to table three. This is happening, this is happening, this is happening. I think that's how all the qualifiers should be covered for every event. I found it really engaging.
Yeah.
I was sat at home watching it. I loved it. I was excited by it, and everyone, I think, loves Judgment Day. So let's have more of it.
Yeah, hats off to World Snooker Tour for sort of getting that one going. Because I think it is them as opposed to Discovery that cover that, isn't it? So, yeah, hats off to them for that. It's absolutely brilliant. I reckon Dave Hendon will have needed a rub down with a wet coffee at the Radio Times after that one. He must have been shattered.
Now, let me ask you something.
Go on.
Because we can only assume at this point that my invitation to the premiere of Ronnie's documentary last week was lost in the post. What was it like? How was it? You were there. Tell us about it.
Do you know, I've got to say, it was amazing. It really was. And I mean, it was fantastic. I went down there. My son came down with me, Elliot, my youngest son, 16 years old. And we walked in. We were followed in by Ronnie Wood from the Rolling Stones. I mean, that's cool. That is cool in itself, okay? We're followed into the cinema by Ronnie Wood. It was in Leicester Square in the Odeon Cinema Deluxe there. And we're followed in by Ronnie Wood. It was incredible. We got into the actual cinema. There was a green carpet as opposed to a red one. And there was the full, like, media walk. So you walked along like a backdrop of the logo of The Edge of Everything and all this. And you're on a green carpet. On the other side, opposite the backdrop, there's just literally journalists TV, radio, print, everything, waiting, obviously not to interview me and my son. Thankfully, we just walked across completely unnoticed, but waiting to interview everyone else that was there. And then once we got in there, well, goodness me. I mean, there was, apart from your good self, there was everyone. Like, literally everyone. from Alan Shearer.
Thank you.
Alan Shearer, Ian Wright. Radzi was down there. I had a chat with Radzi. David Beckham, wandering around. Met David Beckham. What a nice chap, by the way. What a lovely guy. He had a picture with my son, which was very, very nice of him. The England Rugby Union guys were there. Owen Farrell, Manu Tuilagi. They were all in there. It was, Judd was there, Jack Lizowski was there. It was packed full of everyday household names. Yeah, quite an experience, actually. Second premiere I've been to in my life. Oddly, both with green carpets. What's that all about? But there you go. And, yeah, it was great. I thought the film was...
Well, let me just quickly interject and ask the question all the listeners will now want to know. What was the other premiere you've been to?
It was a long time ago. It must be 14-15 years ago. There was a, if you remember, Ben 10, the kids program, Ben 10.
Were you in Ben 10?
No, there was a Ben 10 film made, and my eldest son, who turns 20 this week, he won two tickets to the premiere. So myself and him went to that. The film was directed by a guy called Alex Winter. Right? Who you think, I have no idea who that is, okay? He was Bill S. Preston from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Wow.
Right? The guy with the curly blonde hair? That's Alex Winter. So he also directed a load of the Red Hot Chili Peppers promo videos as well, which are brilliant. He directed it. We met, there was Diversity performed at the premiere and all this. So, yeah, that, and it was, their logo, Ben 10 logo is green, black and white, so there's a green carpet for that. So how weird that 15, 16 years apart, I go to two film premieres, both with green carpets. Bizarre.
Well, maybe the next one you go to will have a red carpet.
Well, you never know. We live in hope, don't we? We live in hope. But the film, amazing. And I mean brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I'm not just saying that because I am for one very, very fleeting moment in it. It's very, very good. It's a real eye-opener. And I know the feedback, I think, from everyone, universally, everyone I know that's seen it has said, you know, what a film, what a great film. And it was great, yeah. So after the film, we had Alistair Campbell, the former Labour spin doctor, I think he was, hosting, or MP, hosting a Q&A with David Beckham, Sam Blair, who's the director of the film, and Ronnie. And that was very good. It was very engaging, very interesting. A real treat to be at, I've got to say. But as I say, all the feedback I've seen from it is universally positive. I was working somewhere today and I walked in. There's a lady in there. She said to me, do you do like snooker comparing as well, Phil? I said, yeah, I do, yeah. Why? And she said, well, me and my husband were watching this film last night about Ronnie O'Sullivan. And you came out, I'm like, I'm sure that's Phil. I said, amazing. So people who wouldn't normally watch snooker are watching it, which is good. That's good for the sport. As I said on previous podcasts, you know, it's, if it reaches out there and it transcends snooker and snooker fans, happy days. It's great news for the sport. So, yeah, hopefully it'll get the figures. Now, just for our overseas listeners, I've had a lot of messages on all socials saying, I'm in America, I'm in Canada, I'm in Australia, I'm in Spain, wherever. We can't see it. It's not on our Amazon Prime. And people are asking me when it's going to be out, where they can watch it. I don't know. Okay? I'm literally in it for about 3 seconds.
Why don't you know the answers to these things? Yeah. You should know these things.
It wasn't. I didn't negotiate the global distribution rights for it, strangely enough.
It's outrageous.
If I do hear anything, I'll post it on social media, obviously. But at announcer Phil or at 147 pod, but yeah, I've no idea. I'll be honest, no idea at all.
Our journalist friend from BBC 5 Live, Jamie Broughton, was backstage in the press room today, telling me how he was accosted by a member of the public today in the Barbican, who came up to him and asked him if he knew where a certain block of ticketing was in the auditorium, and he said, "I don't work here. How am I supposed to know this?" He said, well, you've got your security pass on. You know, he's a pass to get backstage to the press room. He said, you should know these things. You know, how do you not know?
That's amazing, isn't it? Jamie Broughton, the king of the bear pit of all the people.
The Broughton bear pit.
The Broughton bear pit. For anyone
many
that doesn't know.
Many a man has become unstuck in the Broughton bear pit. Don't worry about that.
But just for listeners that aren't aware who Jamie Broughton is, he works at the BBC and he's known for doing quite forthright post-match interviews. Is that fair?
Well, the funny thing about Jamie is, and I'm not sure if Jamie listens to the podcast. Jamie, if you do, please take this as a compliment. Jamie has such a lovely manner about him. He's like the smiling assassin, and he's able to, you know, cozy up to the player in a very innocent manner. He'll ask you some really nice questions and then, like, you know, sticks it to you and asks you the one you don't want to be asked. He's an absolute gentleman, I have to say, and a really nice guy. But as we say, we've nicknamed the interview area the Broughton Bear Pit, and many a player have found their death in there.
It's right.
A bit like the Bermuda Triangle. Once you get in there, there's no getting out.
Yeah, he looks so unassuming, doesn't he? And he just, you know, he's nice kneecaps. That's the way it tends to go with Jamie's. I've seen many player fall to Jamie Broughton in the bear pit. So there we go.
Isn't that his email address, isn't it? nicekneecaps@bbc.co.uk.
That's right, yeah. I don't know. Send him an email, see what happens. No,
it'd be
don't.
Nice to send an email to that email address, wouldn't it, and see where it ended up. nicekneecaps@bbc.co.uk.
Yeah, it's definitely Jamie
Broughton.
/
the Broughton Bear Pit.
Absolutely. Right. So we've talked about media, we've talked about press, we've talked about the Ronnie movie. Let's get on to some actual snooker, shall we? So since our last podcast, the Champion of Champions has happened. It was a big win for Mark Allen, beating Judd Trump, the very much informed Judd Trump, in the final. And it was some performance from the pistol, wasn't it?
It was. And I think, you know, with respect to Mark, I think it was a bit of a surprise. I think people thought Judd was going to win that final. I think he started as favourite, and rightly so. I think he's been on this incredible run, you know, which, you know, did end out there in China in the international championships. But what a run to have had in recent times. Won three tournaments already this season. You know, Judd definitely, I'm sure, went into that final as the favourite. But Mark just dispatched him with, you know, seemingly very easy, and put him to bed and showed that, you know, the man of the season, the man of the moment, is human after all. And, you know, on his day, can be beaten. And Mark played, you know, great, I thought. I thought he played really well. And, fully deserved to be crowned the Champion of Champions.
Yeah, he was superb. He really was. And it I think that does go to show you, doesn't it? It's all about the day. It's all about that one day. You know, form, once you're actually out there playing, form doesn't really count for anything, does it? It's all about that day. And on that day, Mark Allen was absolutely tremendous.
Yeah, tremendous. I mean, if we skip back a couple of days to the Thursday and the day I played in my group, you know, I played Judd myself in our group final that night. You know, it was a case of just being present and witnessing a couple of moments of brilliance from Judd. It was a great match, I thought. I thought we both played really, really nicely. Nearly went all the way. I think it was 6-4. And, of course, there's that moment of brilliance where Judd's made a clearance that, frankly, he had no right to make. He played four or five wonder shots in the break, not least the first shot, doubling the first red. I had three reds on cushions, 50-odd points ahead. I walked back to my seat thinking, well, you know, I'd definitely get back to the table somehow. I think the next time I got back to the table was to break off in the next frame. It was ridiculous. Of course, the yellow, which has gone viral, the yellow forcing it round off two cushions with run inside to miss the brown and green and flick the last red off the cushion over the middle pocket, as played, is one of the best shots of all time. People go on about the clearance Alex Higgins made in the 1982 semi-final against Jimmy White. Well, this one, I think, put that one to bed. I think this one was better than that. And some of the shots Judd played were just, it was a pleasure to be there and witness them, frankly. Phenomenal.
Yeah, that...
Which only makes Mark Allen's victory against him in the final that much more spectacular.
I was going to say, when you look at form and everything else, yeah, it does. That shot, what... When you obviously, you were sat there watching him and you saw that shot. I mean, what did you actually think there? Was it just like a, wow, that's some shot?
Well, you know, you sat there trying to calculate the chances of him potting the yellow into the specific part of the pocket he has to generate the angle for the cue ball. Then he's got to get the right amount of topspin and side on to arc the cue ball off two cushions around the intervening balls to hit the red on the right side to flick it over the pocket. If he gets any of those things wrong, the shot doesn't work.
Yeah.
And as it was, he got all of them right, and the red finished dripping over the middle pocket. It was a phenomenal shot played by a phenomenal player. And as I say, it makes Mark Allen's victory over him in the style he did in the final a couple of days later even that more impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. So a big win for Mark Allen in the Champion of Champions. There's a question on our listeners' questions later on about the Champion of Champions. So we'll keep our powder dry a little bit on the actual event and the tournament, because there's a good question coming up. Just on that, we've had a lot of listener questions. So there's no rant from Sean this week. How can you rant when you're in a beautiful city like York anyway? You know, how could you possibly rant when you're there? You couldn't.
Well, I've just come straight from the studio. I've been in the studio all afternoon with Stephen Hendry and Hazel Irvin. And anyone who saw the coverage today would know I'm fairly ranty anyway today. I'm just in a bad mood. I gave John Parrott a bit of abuse. He was in the commentary box. He called the shot correctly. Judd Trump played like a trick shot yellow off two cushions. It was a fabulous shot. And I said, well, the most amazing shot about that, Hazel, is not the shot itself, but John Parrott actually called it. I said, proof indeed that even a broken clock's right twice a day.
Oh, John,
I've just been
you.
In a bad mood, to be honest. Yeah. So there's no rant this time round. I'm just feeling generally quite ranty. But that'll dissipate as my disappointment over last night's defeat ebbs away.
Well, we've got loads of listener questions to get through. So we're gonna focus on those. Before we do that, let's talk UK Championship then. So the UK Championship is currently on at the Barbican in York. Sean is there for the BBC. I'm not. that's just how it is. And well, let's just look at some of the results so far. So we're recording this on Monday evening, back in our traditional recording slots. The results so far, Mark Williams beat Fan Zheng Ji 6-4. Ding Junhui beat Mark Allen. So Mark had that great win in the Champion of Champions. And Ding's turned him over 6-5. That's a great result for
Ding. It was just on that, we just take a little pause there to discuss, because, you know, off the back of a great win at the Champion of Champions, Pistol went to York, you know, full of confidence and in fine fettle. What a banana skin somebody like Ding Junhui is in the qualifiers. I mean, it's just ridiculous. He's like a grenade waiting to go off at any stage. You know, match sharp, match fit, ready, a former winner. You know, a terrible draw for someone in the first round, just waiting for it to go wrong. It was interesting what Mark said at the end of the match, because I think he said something along the lines of he felt he played all the snooker in the match. He felt he did all the scoring. I think he felt he played really well himself. He felt good in his game. He just lost.
Yeah.
And isn't that the way in our sport? You know, a good preparation, a good performance doesn't mean you're going to win.
Yep.
Mark Allen, champion, defending champion, the winner the week before, out in the first round, like yours truly. We live to fight another day.
It's funny you mentioned about the draw, you know, because when the draw was made and I saw that, and I was looking for Ding anyway, because Ding as a qualifier at the UK's, I mean, that's a nightmare for anyone. And when I saw it, I'm like, oh, defending champion Mark Allen against Ding, who, let's face it, loves the UK Championship. That, as soon as I saw that draw, I thought, oh, that's a toughie. That's a really tough first round. And so it happened. Right. Now, this was some session of snooker. Tom Ford beat Nopon Senkam 6-5 from 5-1 down. Jamie Clark beat Kyron Wilson 6-5 from 5-1 down. What? That whole evening was just crazy, wasn't it?
Bonkers. I was commentating with Dennis Taylor on that match between Kyron Wilson and Jamie Clark. Kyron went 5-1 ahead. I think Jamie obviously won the next frame. And we were chatting off microphone to one of the directors, and I said, it'd be funny, because in an hour's time, you know, they were discussing dinner plans, and I said, well, in an hour's time, you could be shaking hands here at five frames apiece, you know, don't book the table just yet. Yeah. And of course, about an hour later, the two players were shaking hands. Meanwhile, on the other table, Because we, in the comms box, you have the scores for both matches that are in play at the same time, which is a little distracting, actually. But it's nice to keep abreast of what's going on over the wall. The match between Nopon Sankam and Tom Ford was one for the ages. They just kept making century breaks between them, one-frame visits. It was an incredible match. And in the last frame, Nopon was in first. I think he made a 50-odd break. And I can't remember if he missed or played a poor safety shot. I can't remember. But I remember Tom came to the table with all the balls out in the open. And he managed to hold on to his composure. I think he said afterwards it was a match he couldn't have won a year or two ago. But he held on to his composure, riding that crest of the wave of confidence from his recent exploits in China. And you know what? He played bloody well.
Yeah. I was going to just say, actually, just to echo what Tom said, I think a year or two ago he loses that match. And he loses it comprehensively. The fact that he now seems to have that mental fortitude to think, no, actually, I'm still in this. I am going to keep going. Before, he used to get angry, didn't he? He used to get really angry. And I think he just sort of seen red, you know, chucks his cue down and give it up. But, yeah, it's a very different Tom Ford we're looking at this season, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, I've known him a long time. You know, what am I, 41? Yeah, I've known him at least 30 years, 31, 32 years since we were boys. And that's probably all he ever had missing, to be completely honest. He knows every shot in the book. He's a fabulous break builder.
Yep.
Control of the cue ball, plays the right shots at the right time. The only thing he didn't have was just that little bit of composure at the right time. And if he's got that, if he's learned how to do that, better late than never, he could be very dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely he could. So that was, Jamie Clark, Kyron Wilson, 6-5. That's a great win for Jamie Clark. Really, really good win for Jamie and a bad loss for Kyron, it's got to be said. Luca Brissell, back to winning ways, finally. 6-4 over Yuan Sijun. Elliot Slesser lost out to Zhang Ander. Zhang Ander continues this incredible vein of form this season. 6-5. Another decider. He's been rife with deciders this week. Matt Selt, the reigning Indian Open champion, contractually obliged, beat Ali Carter 6-3. Hossein Rafai beat Sean Murphy 6-4. Talk me through the re-rack, Sean. There was a re-rack and it was a bit of a strange one. It's caused a kerfuffle.
I know. It's caused a bit of a stir, hasn't it, that on social media. Again, unlike anything to do with me, it's caused a bit of a commotion. Do you know what? He just caught me on the hop, so to speak. I obviously wasn't expecting a re-rack or even the suggestion of a re-rack, you know, a few minutes into the frame, just whilst we were in about safety. But I think it was the third frame. I think I was 2-0 down at the time. I think my thought process was something like, you know, let's get the frame re-racked. You might break off and leave me a long red, and this could be the start of my comeback. I think that was the bones of it. I didn't think any more of it. I've never seen a re-rack as early in a frame. I've seen a bit of the commotion it's caused on social media. It caught me completely by surprise, I have to be honest. I wasn't expecting it at all. I suppose looking back, without wanting to criticise referee Marcel Eckhart at all, when did it happen that the players could just agree to re-rack a frame? I'm not aware of that being the norm. I thought the referee was kind of the boss of that situation, the orchestrator of that situation. Shouldn't the suggestion of a re-rack come from the referee, not the players? I don't know that, you know, it's not a rule. I just think it's a... You know, it was a strange situation. Yeah. As I say, I didn't see it coming.
I think my understanding of it is that a referee can sort of almost use a re-rack as a threat to players. You know, if there's no movement in three shots each, you know, we'll re-rack. But I think the players can just call a re-rack. I don't think there's... Yeah, that's as I understand it, that's always been the case, that you can call a re-rack if you agree to it. Whenever you like, really. As long as both players agree, you can have a re-rack.
It took me by surprise. It's not. I wouldn't have had many re-racks in my whole career. No. It's, you know,
weird.
I know players that play for re-racks. I know players that try to get re-racks. That, you know, they shall remain nameless, but their surname does rhyme with Belby. you know, I don't know. It caught me by a complete surprise. As it happens, I won the third frame somehow.
Yeah.
So, you know, it worked out well for me in the end. But, yeah, took me by surprise. Was a bit of a weird one.
There we go. So today's results so far, Judd Trump 6-1 over Pang Jung-shu. Big win for Judd. That Barry Hawkins beat a very dogged Ben Wollaston 6-4. Great to see Ben qualifying.
Yeah, really good.
Good lad, is Ben.
Ben's not been, really, you know, guy. Not been in great health. Yes. I did say during the coverage today that there's a bit of gentle banter on the tour, that his wife Tatiana Wollaston, as one of the best referees on tour, does probably spend more time at tournaments these days than Ben does. But it was all in good humour. And when he led the match at 3-1, it looked like you know, I was going to have egg on my face, having made the joke. Such a shame. You know, I'm very fond of Ben. You know, there has to be some impartiality, of course, but I don't think anyone has a bad word to say about Ben Wollaston at 3-1 up. He looked like the winner, but he really did let one go there. We obviously covered it during the coverage this afternoon. Barry Hawkins, however, in his own words, got stronger the closer to the line he got. You know, again, riding that crest of belief, that wave of confidence from being number four on the one-year list this season, having a great season. He's got that belief back. Now he thinks he's going to win when he gets into situations like that, rather than thinking he's going to lose. And the closer he got to the line, the better he played and the stronger he got. The other match we covered this afternoon with Pang Jung-shu and Judd Trump was completely different. Judd opened up with a great century. A few frames that went a bit stagnated, a bit fragmented here and there. Pang never put Judd under any pressure at all. He really didn't put it up to him. He went a bit timid. He went quite defensive in his gameplay. You've got to put it up to the top players. You know, that's the only way you intimidate them. You've got to be aggressive, go for your shots. He didn't do that. And in the end, Judd went ahead and was a very easy winner. He said something very interesting, though, actually, in the studio when he came into chat to Hazel, Stephen and myself. We questioned him about a particular shot that he played, which, you know, is an exhibition shot. And he had several easier opportunities, options. He could have played a different style of shot. And he actually said in those situations, he always prefers to play the shot that he knows he's going to gather the biggest round of applause. He plays the shot for the crowd.
Is that
which
right?
I thought was an amazing admission.
Wow.
But actually something that rings true. He is an entertainer.
Yeah, he is.
He looks for those moments of inspiration in matches. They were the words he used. Do you know what? If he continues like that, and if his opponents continue to not put him under any pressure, I think he's the man to beat this week.
Yeah, he'll certainly be tough. Now, so tonight, Mark Selby against Mark Joyce. There's two Marks in that already. I don't need to make any up. Jack Lizowski against Jamie Jones. That'll be a good game. Jamie Jones has been playing well of late. And Lizowski's always exciting to watch. So I think that'll be a cracker. And then the first round finishes tomorrow with Ronnie O'Sullivan against Anthony McGill. Tough opener for Ronnie there, I would suggest. And he's a bit lightly raced. He's not been playing in too many tournaments. McGill, always tough on that kind of stage. John Higgins against Joe O'Connor. Rob Milkins against Tepchaya Unnu tomorrow night. And also Neil Robertson against Zhou Yulong. Let's talk about Neil Robertson. Not been in great form. He's explained it away on social media. Just said, you know, he needs a break. He needs to get home. He needs to get back to Oz. He's had this thing of winning a title every year, isn't he? And this, I think, is his last chance, because I don't think he'll be in the shootout. I don't think he'll be in the Scottish, because I think he's going home, isn't he? And, yeah, he's got to do it here, isn't he, if he's going to keep that up?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. If he's going to do it, he needs to do it now, this week. Not working with Chris Henry anymore. That didn't last very long.
Yeah.
I think he's kind of quietly working with Joe Perry a little bit, perhaps not officially, but, you know, he's having Joe come around with a bit of company. They're obviously really good mates. Wants that kind of friendly face on tour with him. Of course, you know, let's hope Joe Perry's doing the driving, because you just couldn't rely on Neil Robertson to get you to the right place. I mean, I congratulated Neil on getting to the correct venue in Shanghai, you know, because there's plenty of places he could do. I think there is only one Shanghai in the world, to be fair. So, you know, he was odds on to get to the right city. But, you know, you would never know. listen, Neil Robertson, like us all, is currently going through a bit of a dip in form. He's currently, you know, we all have these ups and downs in life. You know, snooker's no different to anyone else's life. He's currently having a bit of a dip, but nobody's nothing to prove to anybody. He's got one of the best CVs of anyone that's ever played the sport. So he's nothing to prove. Would it surprise anyone if in a week's time he was stood there with the trophy as the UK champion 2023? No.
that's the mad thing, isn't it? That is the crazy thing about snooker. No, it wouldn't. No, it wouldn't at all. No. It would not be a shock. The form that he's been in and everything else, it still would not be a shock to anybody if Neil Robertson lifts that trophy on Sunday night.
That's the class of the man. You know, he's a great, great player, a wonderful player, got every shot in the book, one of the greats of the sport. So, yeah, listen, going through a bad time. We've all been through bad times. Some players have been through better and worse ones. He's currently going through a bit of a dip. That won't last forever. And as I say, if in a week's time he was stood there as the 2023 UK champion, no one would be shocked.
Absolutely. Right. We're going to take a very, very short break, after which I'm going to tell you a little bit more about York, which is the city where the UK Championships is, in case you're going, because it is my city and the greatest city on earth. And then we're going to do our oodles of listener questions that we've got. Just for anyone wanting to watch the UK Championships, by the way, it is live on both BBC and Discovery Plus Eurosport. So you've got two different broadcasters covering it all week this week. You can watch every single ball that is struck. We should be back after this.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you like what you're listening to, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to interact with us across all forms of social media at 147pod. That's the words at 147pod. It certainly is. And if you do want to get any questions in, like I said, we've got loads of listener questions. We put a message out there asking for questions. We've been inundated with them. So we've got loads of questions to get through, and we will. But if anyone's got any other questions, just fire them in at 147pod across all forms of social media. And we will, as always, try and get in as many as we possibly can. Sean, you're looking at me.
Absolutely right. Agree with everything you've said. Now, we are, well, one of us. Arguably, I'm gonna give you arguably. I can't give you the greatest city on earth. I'll give you arguably. You know, I'll let you have half of the argument.
I'll take that.
I've walked around York in the last few days, went round the walls of the city and down the shambles and seen it. You know, I like it. Everyone loves it. It's arguably one of the greatest cities on earth.
I'll take that.
As a local resident, as our local tourist guide, not here. give us your must-see places, things to do, best places to go for food and drink. For all the listeners of the podcast who have come to the UK Championships, who have managed to get and download the episode and listen to it whilst they're here, in your best official York Tourist Board captaincy, hit me up. Places to go, things to do, food and drink. Hit me.
Right. Hit you. Never, ever tempt me to do that, Sean, because trust me, I'd happily. As I'm sure a lot of other people would. Right, yeah, if you are visiting York for the UK Championships, or if you're visiting York at any time, there's loads of things to see and do, okay? You just mentioned the Bar Walls there. if the best way to see the city is to walk around the Bow Walls. It's a walled city. You can
Stop. Why do you call them the Bar Walls?
Because
when everywhere else they're called either the walls of the city of York or city walls.
Because each of the entrants is a bar.
A bar.
They're referred to as bars. So you've got Micklegate Bar, you've got Wormgate Bar, which is just round the corner from the Barbican. And of course, Barbican.
So then that doesn't refer to a local pub.
No, it does not. No, absolutely not. Although it does, York does have more pubs. I think it's more pubs per head than any other city in the world, I believe.
I'm shocked.
It's got a lot of pubs. We've got a lot of pubs. But no, the Bar Walls, because of the bars, which are the entrances to the city. And the Barbican.
Is that what most people would call archways?
Yes. Yeah, or gates.
Gotcha.
Possibly gates. The Barbican is so named because the bar, Wormgate Bar, just around the corner from the Barbican, is the only bar with a working Barbican, with the working sort of mesh grill that drops down to block the gate. Hence, the Barbican Centre is the Barbican Centre, hence why it's called that. But you can walk, it's around about 2.5 miles, I think. You can walk right the way around, see the whole of the city. You can see everything from the Bow Walls. It's incredible. So, yeah, walk on the Bow Walls to see the city. That's great. You mentioned the Shambles. The Shambles is great. It was the inspiration for Diagon Alley in the Harry Potter books.
Hang on a minute. You famously don't like Harry Potter. You say they're children's films. How do you know about Diagon Alley?
Well, you know, because it's no, it was basically the Shambles was the inspiration for it, and that's the only reason I've heard of Diagon Alley. Although I have been to the Harry Potter studios, I've told you this. I've just never seen the films or read the book.
Have you been in the Harry Potter shops on the Shambles?
Well, there's enough of them. I mean, it's like literally every other shop. When you go in the Shambles, now this is great, okay? When you go in the Shambles was originally a street full of butchers. That was where all the butchers were, okay? So if you look at the shop fronts, you can still see some of the hooks outside the shops at the front where they used to hang the meat from. And if you look on the ground, you'll notice there's cobbles in the middle, but then there's like thick stones either side. Because this is grim. The blood used to drain from the animals that were hung up and used to run down the gutters either side because it slopes ever so slightly downwards and it slopes right the way down. And there's two buildings you can actually shake hands across the street, above the street in the Shambles. Amazing place. So do go there. For some reason, there's a shop selling ghosts in the Shambles that people queue up for hours to buy one of these little porcelain ghosts. Yeah, I think it's the top thing on TripAdvisor. I don't know, but it's brilliant. So there's the Shambles. Obviously, the Minster. You've got to go to the Minster.
The only shop I'd queue up for on the Shambles, I've got to be honest, is the fudge shop at the top.
That's great, isn't it? Isn't it good? Make your
own fudge. Yes, please.
Isn't it good? Well, my friend's got the Potions Cauldron, which is like a place where you can go and buy potions, Harry Potter-style potions. There's all of that. There's obviously the Minster. There's all the museums, the Castle Museum, the Yorkshire Museum, fantastic. We've got the Christmas market at the moment, which is very, very popular. However, if you want to pay £8 for a bit of fudge, go to the Christmas market. Brilliant. Good luck. Okay. But York's got loads of great small businesses. If you go to the little back streets, side streets, you'll see some amazing businesses. So don't just go to Christmas market. Go everywhere else as well. Right, food and drink, because this is what we're most interested in, Sean. First of all, if you want a proper pub, Sean, you know where I'm going with this one, don't you? You go to my friend's pub, who's also called Sean. You go to the Maltings. It's won the Camera Real Ale Pub of the Year loads of times. It's brilliant. Don't swear, because you will get thrown out. It's as simple as that. And don't eat the chili unless you do really like it hot, because it is firecracker style. It's superb, okay? That's the Maltings. If you want somewhere else to eat, there's the Star in the City for really good food and service. But there is a place not far from the Barbican, actually, on Wormgate, called Brew York. Okay, now Brew York, it's a small independent brewery and tap house where they sell all their own beers in there. Also, in the same place, you've got Yuzu Street Food, which is like a Korean street food place. So you've got Brew York and Yuzu Street Food all in one place, just around the corner from the Barbican on Wormgate. Check it out. If you're going there, that is a great place for some really, really good beer and really, really good food. And it's so close by. So they're the places I would say to go to. And they're not necessarily the ones that you'd see on the tourist maps. But yeah, so give those a go and see how you get on. But enjoy my city. It is beautiful. I love the place, as you can probably tell. So, yeah, just enjoy it. There's plenty to do there, that's for sure. So don't just go for one day and go to the snooker.
It absolutely is one of the best cities in the world, I'll give you that. And I love it here too. Got to see loads of sights over my years of coming here, and indeed the last few days. Of course, we've skipped over one of the big stories of the week, though, and one of the sights we got to see yesterday was the arrival of the fire engine crew. Now, they had a really long journey to the Barbican. We were evacuated at 5 to 7, just before play started. There was a fire in the venue, and we all had to be evacuated. Of course, 50 yards from stage door across the road is where the local fire station is.
It's literally right behind the Barbican.
So the fire crew ran into their van. They put the blues and twos on, went round to the front of the building. They waved at us all at stage door. And we were all evacuated into the Edinburgh Arms. And it was very funny. We were in there. We walked in the main room in the Edinburgh Arms. They were setting up for some entertainment. You know, they had the guest entertainer was on, just setting the microphones up and stuff. So we got ushered into one of the back rooms. And we walked in there. And there was this bloke in there minding his own business. He'd gone in for a quiet Sunday evening pint to watch a bit of the darts. And then the entire snooker fraternity descended into the room. I felt so, so sorry for him. He just wanted to have his pint of smooth or whatever it was, watching the darts, but no. But in typical snooker player style, it was a room full of snooker players and nobody bought a drink.
No, of course they didn't. No, of course they didn't buy a drink. No, who's going to buy a drink in that situation? That's, yeah, amazing. I mean, I was in a hotel in, where was I yesterday? Milton Keynes. Sat in a hotel room waiting for the snooker to come in. And I mentioned you. I messaged you and I said, what's going on? Where's the snooker? And you're like, yeah, fire brigade are here. We're in the pub opposite. And I was like, oh, okay. Fair enough. That was, yeah, weird. But we had one in Belfast the other week as well. Northern Ireland Open.
Incredible,
there wasn't
an
actual fire. There was a fire alarm there, wasn't there? Everyone got cleared out. Really strange.
Well, I tell you what, I felt a little bit more self-conscious walking out to my theme Disco Inferno with the words Burn Baby Burn as I came down the stairs about 20 minutes later. Goodness
fantastic.
Me.
Right, let's get into some listener questions then. I shall start us off. Matt3789 on Instagram. Bit out of date this one though, Sean. Sparkly suit for the UK. So I'm going to throw it out there. Sparkly trousers maybe for the shootout?
Well, listen, I'm over for the duration from Ireland, come what may. The sparkly suit and all did come. It was a brand new suit that I was wearing last night, which was a tailor-made suit for me from Chris Souter and Brothers up in Belfast, a good friend of mine. And it was fantastic. I was very happy with that. I got all my other gear with me as well, hoping for a good long run in the tournament. The suit, as it ended up, got a couple of hours in the arena, and that was that. So all the sparkly gear will be going to the shootout, whether I wear it or not. You'll have to tune in and see.
So let us know then on social media at 147pod, should Sean wear the sparkly trousers for the shootout? Obviously not a full suit. It's just the trousers at the shootout, isn't it? And, you will be wearing a polo shirt as well. But
just the trousers at the shootout.
Should he wear the sparkly trousers to light it up? Anyway, Sean.
We'll see. Right, we're a bit of a long question here, so bear with me. From Zaria Shroff over on Instagram. Says, love your podcast, guys. Religiously listen every week. I've heard Sean say before, he doesn't believe a team format works in snooker. However, it works in tennis and golf. If you look at the IPL in cricket, where big money men came in and spent huge sums of money to buy players in for their teams, then other countries followed suit, similar events because it attracted so much money, then surely snooker could do the same. It couldn't be a country-based tournament because only England and China would have enough players, so would it need to be individual teams? What are your thoughts? Zahir, my thoughts are that it wouldn't work in snooker, as I've said before. Thank you very much. Good night.
Can I just say, I did cut that question down. it was initially longer than that. Okay, right.
No, I think. I mean, you know, let's just take the examples Zaria has given is the IPL. Well, cricket's a team sport; it's not an individual sport.
Yeah.
Anytime you try to get individuals to play team sport, it doesn't work. The mentality is completely different.
Yeah, I mean that Ryder Cup's rubbish, isn't it? It's terrible. Yeah, it's just garbage. That Ryder Cup.
Yeah,
oh,
it's
wait
only up. The third biggest sporting event
yeah.
you know, in the world. Yeah, no, but yeah, well, you know, it
I've never enjoyed the Moscone. Oh no, yeah, Moscone Cup. That's a team sport. That's an individual.
I don't think it works.
Davis Cup's rubbish, isn't it?
You've asked me my opinion. I don't think it works.
Davis Cup is terrible, isn't it? In tennis, I mean, it's rubbish. I don't think the IPL thing really stacks up. I still think it could work. And I think what you said earlier on about Judgment Day, how they go table to table, I think a World Cup or something similar with three tables in operation at the same time, and you do that where the coverage goes from one to another, where there's something interesting going on, I think that could work personally. Sean disagrees. We've talked about this before, but I don't think we're ever going to agree on that one.
No, do you know what I'm a bit tired of? And I don't know if this is because I'm just in a bad mood from losing yesterday, but I am feeling a bit ranty. I'm tired of everyone, and I've been guilty of this myself in the past. I'm tired of us comparing ourselves to other sports and trying to make us like other sports. We're not. We're an individual sport. People need to stop trying to shoehorn us into other, you know, a round peg in a square hole and all that carry on. We are an individual sport of people who want to beat each other. Trying to make us compete in team sport, in team events, isn't going to work.
There you go. I think it should be tried. Sean doesn't. We disagree, as per usual. Okay, Marco, I'm going to say Sittinen, on Instagram. Thanks for your question, Marco. Sean, are we going to see you at the shootout? And any recommendations for Swansea nightlife?
Well, definitely going. Looking forward to going. And ever been to Swansea?
I've been once and I had a curry and it was absolutely banging. It was a great curry. There's like a whole street of Indians and it was wonderful. When I say Indians, Indian restaurants, I must say.
The other example was just peculiar.
Yeah, just really odd. I've got to say, never actually been out in Swansea apart from for a meal. We'll both be at the shootout. I'll be there the full 4 days. We'll see how long Sean's there for. Hopefully the full 4 days. That's next week, Wednesday through to Saturday. I'm sure Swansea's a great night out. I just get the feeling it will be, and it certainly will be next week, that's for sure, because we'll be there.
Graham Hickman over on Insta. Graham, before I read this question out, I already love this question. The reason why will become clear very soon. Love the podcast. Keep up the good work. Interesting to see Hendry try to copy your format. Prefer yours, in all honesty. Graham, you are a man of excellent taste.
Graham, just clap that one in. Graham, we love you.
We applaud you, Graham.
Yeah, well done, Graham.
You talked about new snooker formats last time, but how about a Scotch doubles event similar to the World Cup of Pool? I've got deja vu. I think alternate shots make it more interesting. What do you think? Well, I mean... My team rant aside, I could probably get on board with the doubles element because that has been done in snooker before. We have the mixed doubles. One of my earliest memories is going to the World Doubles and watching Steve Davis playing that as a boy. So I kind of can get involved with doubles. I like the Scotch doubles element of playing alternate shots. I think that's called foursomes in golf.
Yeah, would you go Scotch doubles?
Obviously, everyone knows I like golf, so I could probably get involved in that. But, I mean, you'd have to be paired with somebody who had decent cue ball control, couldn't you? You know, you couldn't be paired with someone who didn't know where the cue ball was going. So, you know, that rules Ben Williston out. you'd have to pick your partner very, very carefully, wouldn't you?
Do you think Scotch doubles would work or not? I think it would just make it very, very long.
It's one of my bones of contention. You know, when you watch the mixed doubles, Scotch doubles in nine ball, and they consult over every shot.
Yeah.
Where do you want the ball? Where shall I put this ball?
And that's it.
Put it in the obvious position that everyone can see where you're going to put it. Stop chatting over every shot. Yeah, get on with it.
That's my problem with Scotch doubles. I think it would drag it right out and make it a really, really long affair. But who knows? So there you go. That's Sean's thoughts on that one. I'm going to say Gil Cordoba on Twitter. Hi guys, question for Sean about the Champion of Champions. Now this was the one I alluded to earlier on, Sean. What's your opinion on the environment of the tournament, the presentation, DJ, polo shirts, camera angles? From your perspective, what else was different from other events?
Well, you know, the hospitality from Matchroom, for those that don't know, Champion of Champions is a Matchroom event, a standalone event, not a World Snooker Tour event. It is sanctioned by World Snooker Tour, but it's a Matchroom run event. So the hospitality is slightly different, slightly better, if I'm honest, than your average World Snooker Tour event. And I just think, you know, all the things you've listed there, you know, they all get ticks from me, the presentation. I like the music element. I like the fun element, the shirts, the cameras, this, that. I'm all for it. I'm all for innovation. I like trying new things. The Lycra shirts that we wore this year were a little bit unforgiving, if I'm honest.
And, the designs look good, though, didn't they?
No, I thought they were brilliant. Yeah. And, you know, I've got a little junior version of my shirts for my children, Harry and Molly. So I love the element of that. I love the fact you can buy your favourite players' gear. We've never been able to do that. It's one of the things we don't have in common with every other sport in the world. You can't buy the merch. You can't buy your favourite players' gear. So I'm all for a move in that direction. I like the difference. I like the fact that event's identifiable. I'm all for it, if I'm honest. All for it. No negatives. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's good. I think it's good. It's always a great event, is Champion of Champions, because it is that, isn't it? They're all champions in it, apart from Ding this year for some reason. Everyone in it is a champion, and it's, you know, it's always a good level of snooker. I like the group-ish format of it. I think it works really, really well. Yeah, it's a good event. Like we said, I think, on the last podcast, I think there's a really good mix now of different kinds of events and different clothing worn and that kind of thing. And, you know, it's great. We've got the UK Championship this week. We've got the shootout next week. You know, two tournaments don't get any more different than those two, do they? So, yeah, I think it's good. I think it's a really good mix that we've got at the moment. And, yeah, long may that continue.
A bit of a two-in-one here from listener Mickey Hakkinen and Martin Yap, both made similar points about Ronnie, saying, if Ronnie wants to pull out of events, shouldn't he do it well in advance so there's more time provided for a replacement or fans to withdraw, etc.? Lots of disappointed fans in Bolton on the day he was meant to play. Also, Mickey says, why are people making such a big deal about what Judd wore to the premiere of Ronnie's film? Well, let's deal with that first, because I haven't seen it. Don't know what that means. You were there. What was he wearing?
He had a designer tennis shirt on. I thought it looked quite smart, actually.
Tennis shirt?
I didn't know if people were making a big deal about it. I've got to say, I've not seen anything about it. Yeah, he had like a horizontal stripe designer, like a polo shirt type thing. Really looks all right. Look good. Mickey, I'd suggest you maybe following the wrong people on social media if people are making a fuss about that. I'd change who you follow. I've not seen any of that, if I'm honest. I thought it looked all right. It looked quite smart.
In terms of the other stuff, in terms of the sort of main body of the question, you know, the rules currently allow you within the rules to pull out really at any stage. Now, once the draw of a tournament is done, if you pull out of an event after that point, you're automatically sanctioned and fined by WST. The only way out of that is with a doctor's certificate. I think the last time Ronnie pulled out of an event, he did cite tennis elbow. Is that correct? I think that was the previous one.
I think this one, he said he was exhausted. He had, he wanted to look after his own mental health, which
that's correct.
That can strike at any time. I hate to say that, this, guys.
That's correct.
You know, it's a disappointment if people have gone there specifically, bought tickets, having seen the draw, known Ronnie's playing on that day, they bought tickets. But if the guy's struggling, you know, he's struggling. He I'm sure he doesn't want to let people down, but if he's struggling, he's going to pull out. The same as you, you know, if your arm started hurting and you felt you couldn't play, you couldn't do, you know, give it your all, you'd pull out, correct?
Yeah, and I have to say, you know, I think there's some suspicion and accusations thrown around about these players, not from Mickey or Martin. I'm not saying that at all here. But, you know, for instance, I was chatting to a player today, and I wouldn't name him, but I was chatting to a player today who said he didn't really want to go to play in the shootout. It doesn't really suit him, to be honest. But he spent his life suggesting that withdrawing from tournaments once the draw's made is a bit naughty. Puts people in an awkward position, fans who bought tickets, the association to find replacements. And so he's sticking to his guns, and he's criticised others for doing it. And so he's not going to withdraw.
Oh, fair play.
Despite it now doesn't suit him, he now doesn't want to go and play in it. But he wants to try and be a good representative, doesn't want to be guilty of what he's accused others of in the past. And so he's going to go and play.
Oh, fair play to him as well. So there you go. Right. Sean Ammo Hamilton on Facebook. Should players milk the walk-in more to get the crowd going? I can't ask Sean that of all the players. Goodness me. I think, Sean, I'm guessing here. I think you may be thinking darts and what some of the players do there, where they really give it the big one. For me, the difference is in darts, the fans can then carry on making loads of noise and shouting, whereas in snooker, we're then asking them to be very quiet straight away, aren't we?
Yeah, again, it's very, very difficult, isn't it? It's difficult to ask people to get so excited and elated and into it and then ask them to be silent.
And then shut up. I mean, that's effectively my job. That is effectively what I do, isn't it?
That's very difficult. That's a difficult balance to find. Do think the players should do a little bit more, if I'm honest. I actually said this in an article this week. I think there's an onus on the players to remember that we are an entertainment industry first. That we've been able to generate a professional tour out of. That's the way around it is. It's not the other way around. We are an entertainment industry first. If we lose sight of that, we lose everything.
Yeah.
And I think there could be an expectation placed on some of the tour to do a little bit more, to have a bit more fan engagement, crowd engagement, get going a little bit more. How many times do you see a player walk into or out of an arena and they don't even acknowledge the fans?
Yeah.
I think it's disgraceful, actually, when you watch some of these matches end. These fans have paid a lot of money to come and watch. They've sat there for 3 hours or so to watch you compete. And at the end of the frame, at the end of the match, the players shake hands and they leave. They might just literally wave casually to the crowd and leave.
Some don't even wave.
It's really weird, I think.
Some don't even wave. The flip side of that, there's quite a lot of players on tour who win or lose, will hang around, they will shake people's hands, they will have pictures, whatever. You know, so that is the flip side, I suppose. But should players milk the walking more? Some,
yes.
A little bit, yes. There you go. Let's have a couple more questions, and then we're going to have to call it a day.
Peter Sturgeon, over from our page on Facebook, do you think the tables are simply too fast these days? And what's your opinion of a return for the Premier League played throughout the season? I think the tables are beautiful
right.
The way they are.
I'm gonna address this. I had a spare hour last week. So I thought, do you know what? I'm going to go and have a knock. There was a snooker club just around the corner from where I was in London. I shan't name them. So I just got a table for an hour, set the balls up and knocked a few balls around and surprised myself at how all right I was, actually. But I normally only ever play in Q zones on the tour, which is star tables, it's strong cloth, you know, it's as the table is out in the arena. The difference between a standard snooker club table that I was playing on last week and those star tables, oh my word. I think I'd forgotten just how different they are, actually.
I bet it was like night and day, was it?
Oh, just not reacting. You know, I can screw a ball back reasonably on the tables in the Q zone. My word, I was having to really, really work for it in this club. If I was getting anything at all, very, very, very different.
So, some would say this is why you need more than one cue, Phil.
Well, yeah, possibly, but you're not playing in a snooker club, are you? You're playing there, which...
I tell you what, if I keep playing the way I'm playing, I'll be off the tour, I'll be on cue tour, and that is playing in clubs.
Yeah, so that's true,
I'll
actually.
I'll have to get used to it very, very soon if I don't turn things around. I think the tables are fantastic. Of course, heaters were brought in to take away the problem that dampness caused when we played in the Far East. Obviously, humidity is completely different now in Thailand and China. And the table heaters were brought in to sort that problem out. There's an argument to be made we don't need them in the UK because the humidity is completely different. But we do use them to try and keep it standardised across the tour. And in terms of a return for the Premier League, I would be well up for that. I used to love the Premier League nights, Thursday nights, touring the country, packed houses, playing the best in the world, live on Sky Sports. I used to love those nights. They were fantastic. Don't know why we lost them. I really wish they'd come back.
Well, it's all about scheduling, is what I've been told. That it's very, very difficult. The trouble is, what Peter said there is, return the Premier League played throughout the season. If you do that, it loses impetus. Okay, the Darts Premier League works because it's every week. It's a Thursday night or whatever, every single week for the run. If you tried to do it throughout the season, it just wouldn't gain the momentum that it needs to sell out those big venues. I think it'd be great. I'd love the Premier League to come back. I really would. I think slightly different format, maybe. I think it'd be wonderful. It maybe open up a different broadcaster as well, possibly, if there was an appetite for it. But it's scheduling. I've mentioned this to the powers that be before, and I've just been told, look, it's scheduling. Trying to get it in, it's an absolute nightmare. So, yeah, that's what it comes down to, unfortunately. It's all about the scheduling. Right, we have got some questions left. We're going to save hold of those for the next podcast. Get your questions in at 147pod across all forms of social media. We will get your question on the next podcast if we have got time. We have got a few there already, but we need to move on because we are just over the hour. For our pointless question now, this was actually sent in by a listener this time, Robbo112 on Instagram, Sean. He asks, now this is, you want a vague one? This is vague. You think mine is bad.
Just before we go any further, is Robbo112 Neil Robertson?
It's not Neil Robertson.
Is it Neil Robertson 112 times he's been to the wrong destination?
It's not.
No. Now it must be Neil Robertson 112 times he missed his intended flight.
It could well be. No, it's not Neil Robertson on Instagram. But Robbo112 asks us this week's pointless question, which is, would you rather be in the wrong place at the right time or the right place at the wrong time? Sean.
Well, I have to say, I've done both of those things. goodness, I don't really know. I mean, the wrong place at the right time appeals to my timekeeping. Like, I'm never late. I'm never, ever late, ever. So being in the wrong place at the right time appeals to that. But, you know, I pride myself on always at least arriving at the right place, even if I were slightly delayed. I'm actually sure this is a Neil Robertson sent in question, because this is about Neil. Neil has had to make this choice on more than one occasion. Would you like to be in the wrong place at the right time or the right place at the wrong time? Goodness me. I'm actually struggling. I have a foot in both camps.
Okay.
But I'm going to go for right place, wrong time, because at least you've got to the where you were trying to get to. Something might have happened to delay you out of your control, but at least you didn't go to the wrong Barnsley.
Well,
Phil, what would you choose?
In true 147 podcast style, I'm going to disagree with you. Okay,
shocked.
Because
I'm shocked.
The right place at the wrong time. There's nothing going on, is there? And I've had some of the best times being in the wrong place. Let's face it, the best things happen in the wrong places, don't they? So if you're in the wrong place at the right time, you're going to have a good time. The right place at the wrong time, there's nothing going on. So it's the wrong place at the right time for me.
Just when you thought you knew somebody.
There you go.
Throw me a curveball like that.
There you go. So what do you think? Would you rather be in the wrong place at the right time or the right place at the wrong time? We massively disagree. Sean is in York for the rest of the week working for the BBC on the UK Championship. Next week, we will both be in Swansea for the shootout, which runs from Wednesday to Saturday. It's one of the best events of the year. You can be a purist all you like. You can say, oh, it's not proper snooker and all that. You can do that. Do you know what it is? It's great fun, Sean, isn't it?
I'll tell you what I think, and I don't think they'd ever admit it, but I've met a few of these purists. I actually think they secretly like it. I just don't think they can bring themselves to admit it. I actually think they like it.
And they'll all watch it as well. They will all watch it.
And they'll all be watching it. They'll know exactly what happens. And they all know the songs. They've dug themselves in too deep now. They just can't admit it.
Of course they do. So look, if you come into Swansea next week, come along, say hello, give us a shout, and yeah, make sure you say hello and let us know that you're there. But for now, Sean, great to see you.
You too. Take care.
Enjoy York. We shall see you in a couple of weeks' time. That was the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you enjoyed what you've just listened to, make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, and interact with us across all forms of social media at 147pod. That's all words at 147pod. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itsinas.
Kayla Itsinas. I'm Kayla Itsinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.